Sunday nights in the Kings. We'll continue thinking about Solomon. We're going to go to 1 Kings chapter 3. As we, the election has got to be on a lot of people's minds. I don't know if everybody's paying attention. Maybe you're better off if you just have somehow found a way to tune it out. But I know it's on a lot of people's minds. And just the idea of becoming a president, it's something else, isn't it? And imagine the first night that somebody spends in the residence of the White House. I can't imagine that. But imagine like the very first night when you turn off the lamps and you try to go to sleep in whatever that bed must be like and whatever that bedroom is like in the residence part of the... And then imagine you wake up in the morning. I guess somebody makes you breakfast. I get, surely, right? I think they have a staff of folks that cook whatever you feel like having that day. And then you go down and you sit down at the desk. And what now? You know? And people bring you stuff and you got decisions to make. And the leaders of the military at some point, maybe not the first day, but at some point, the leaders of our entire armed forces, you know, present you options and you got to choose what to do. And you know, maybe after that you have a meeting with some other folks, and I mean, people are looking to you to set the direction and make decisions. Who would possibly be qualified or even equipped for such a job as that? I mean, what could you possibly do to prepare you for that? And that kind of, the reason I'm having us think through that is I feel like Solomon was having one of those moments at the beginning of his reign when God says to him, "What would you like for me to do for you?" And so we're going to start with that. We're going to talk tonight about Solomon's wisdom. As you think about Solomon, you can hardly think of the name Solomon without thinking about wisdom. And so that's what our lesson is going to be on tonight. 1 Kings chapter 3, and we're going to begin in verse 3. We'll see how well. I might start calling on people to read if I can. My eyesight is getting so bad. I don't think I brought my, you got, hey.
Save the day.
Every day that passes, the print gets smaller on this page. All right. Beginning verse 3. Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father. Only he sacrifices and made offerings at the high places. We talked about that last time. That's what we were looking at. And the king went to Gibeon to offer a sacrifice there, for there was a great high place. Solomon used to offer 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night. And God said, "Ask what I shall give you." Solomon said, "You have shown great and steadfast love to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in faithfulness and righteousness and uprightness of heart toward you. And you have kept for them this great and steadfast love and have given him a son to sit on his throne this day. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of David, my father, although I am but a little child." Now, pause for a second there. He's not a little kid. He's just saying in his own eyes, he was like a child. He was a grown man, but he felt like a little child in this moment. He said, "I do not know how to come out or go in. And your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people, too many to be numbered or counted for multitude. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, that I may discern between good and evil, for who is able to govern this, your great people?" So you get the feeling Solomon's having that kind of over, like, what have I gotten myself into? He's now, David is gone, David the king is dead, and Solomon his son is seated on his throne, and he's obviously feeling ill-equipped for the job. He's feeling too small for this task. And so when God says to him, "What could I do for you?" the first thing on his mind is, "I need some guidance. I need some wisdom. Who could possibly be equipped with enough wisdom to govern this huge nation? And I'm the man now, and so I need you to help me with wisdom." This is the kind of request that pleased God. Verse 10, continuing. "It pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this. And God said to him, 'Because you have asked this and have not asked for yourself long life or riches or the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern what is right. Behold, I now do according to your word. Behold, I give you a wise and discerning mind so that none like you has been before you, and none like you shall arise after you. I give you also what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that no king shall compare with you all your days. And if you will walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and my commandments as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days. So there's three basic, God's reply to Solomon consists of three basic parts. Number one, I grant you your request. I will give you the wisdom you ask for. You ask for wisdom, you're going to be wise like nobody before or after you. Number two, because you didn't ask for riches or all those things, but you asked for wisdom, I'm not only going to grant your request for wisdom, but I'm also going to give you those other things you didn't ask for. I'm going to make you, I'm going to bless you and give you, you know, these other blessings as well. And then I will also give you a long life. But that last one, did you notice something different about that last one? There's three things. I'm going to give you the wisdom, I'm going to give you the riches and honor, and if there's a condition on that last one, notice again in verse 14, if you walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and my commandments as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days. So there's three promises here. I'm going to give you the wisdom you asked for. I'm also going to give you the riches and honor that you didn't ask for. And I'm going to lengthen your days. But don't forget, you've got to obey. You've got to do what you're supposed to do. And now verse 15, it says, Solomon awoke. Behold, it was a dream. Then he came to Jerusalem and stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and offered up burnt offerings and peace offerings and made a feast for all his servants. So God answers his prayer for wisdom, and he made him wise. And we see this in different ways. We see his wisdom in all the things that he did. Now, you know, in our system of government, we divide up the ruling of our country into, you know, the different houses of government. We have lawmaking, we have the execution of those laws, and the protection of our country, the leader, you know, commander-in-chief. We also have the Supreme Court, and all those have pretty much been in the news lately. But in a monarchy like this, he was all the above. He was the ultimate judge. He was also the leader of the armies, I mean, the one who said what to do, and he was also the one that, you know, enforced the laws of God and all those things. So people came to him with their problems. He had to deal with all of that, and you can imagine how overwhelmed he felt. So as an evidence of his wisdom, you know, the first example is the two women who, you know, both had a child, and they wanted him to figure out whose baby was the living baby and whose baby was the one who had died. And, of course, he famously said, bring me a sword, and we'll just divide the child between you two. And suddenly the real mom says, no, don't let her have the child. And he said, then you're the real mom. So that was just an example. I think the reason it's included is just like one example of the types of things that by using his wisdom, he was able to solve seemingly unsolvable problems. And the fame of his wisdom, it says at the end of the chapter, spread throughout the land. Everybody heard about his judgments and his wisdom. And we also see his wisdom in the organization of his affairs. The following chapters, and I struggled to figure out like how much detail to go into in all this, but they go into how he organized his kingdom and his servants and the way he had them on rotations and the way that he brought the materials in to build the temple. And there's another lesson I want to get into with his dedication of the temple, but I'm going to save that for another day. But in the organization of the labor and you know, the trade that he did with other nations, there was an enormous, if you just read the next few chapters, it's an amazing amount of stuff going on, and it was all very well organized and very well run and very efficient and very productive. And of course, we see not only his wisdom through all that, but we see God blessing him so that the people enjoyed peace and prosperity and the kingdom grew. And it was really maybe like the golden age of the kingdom of Israel. In David's day, there was a lot of fighting and a lot of wars. But in Solomon's day, they were given peace, and economically they were able to grow, and wonderful palace was built. The temple was built. And so we see Solomon's wisdom in how he executed all those things. Now turn over to chapter 4. Kind of a summary statement here, verses 20 and 21. Judah and Israel were as many as the sand by the sea. They ate and drank and were happy. Solomon ruled over the kingdom from the Euphrates to the land of Philistines, all the way to the border of Egypt. They brought tribute and served Solomon all the days of his life. So this is, in fact, if you were to go back and look at some of the promises that where God says, I'm going to give you this land, it was from the great river, the river Euphrates, all the way down to the land of Egypt. And this is one of the few times in their history you see that they basically, if they didn't own all of it, they exerted influence over all of it so that the people paid them tribute. And they have this, the kingdom is kind of at its largest extent. It's all of the land that God had promised. So God is keeping all of his promises. It's a wonderful time to be an Israelite. They're eating and drinking and happy. They're at peace. Nobody's fighting. Nobody's pestering them. And Solomon is this super wise king, and he's leading the way. And so it's really kind of a bright, shining moment. His wisdom is also described later in the chapter, beginning verse 29, chapter 4. God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure, breadth of mind like the sand on the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the people of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all other men, wiser than Ethan the Ezrahite. And I thought to myself, that Ethan must have been pretty sharp. You know what I mean? It's like say, Solomon's the wisest guy there. He's even wiser than Ethan. I thought, man, I would have liked to know that Ethan just to see what he was like, because he must have been something. But he was wiser than Ethan the Ezrahite and Heman, or He-Man, I guess if you wanted to say, and Calcol and Darda, the sons of Mahal, and his fame was in all the surrounding nations. He also spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. He spoke of trees, from the cedar that's in Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the wall. He spoke also of beasts and of birds and reptiles and fish. And people of all nations came to hear the wisdom of Solomon from all the ends of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. Isn't that fascinating? He knew all about all kinds of stuff. That's what it means by he had breadth of mind. He was wise when it came to like reading people and figuring out the right answer to a problem. But he was also wise that he could tell you all about all kinds of animals and trees and plants. He knew all kinds of stuff. So much so that his wisdom, people came just to hear what he had to say. They came to ask him questions. They came just to see this wisdom that God had blessed him with. Turn over to chapter 10. I think it's interesting that it mentions that he knew all about animals. And I noticed a verse in chapter 10 that I had never noticed before. Isn't that fun when that happens, when you're reading something and something kind of jumps out like, what? That's been there all my life and I've never noticed this. The very last verse of chapter 10, describing, not the last verse, verse, let's see. Yeah, verse 22. He engaged in all kinds of shipping and business and trade. And so verse 22 says, the king had a fleet of ships at Tarshish at sea with the fleet of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the fleet of ships from Tarshish used to come bringing gold, silver, ivory, apes, and peacocks. Now, has that word apes been in there my whole life? It must have been. But I even went and looked in the King James, and it still says apes, so I think it's been there my whole life. I never noticed that it said that it brought him apes. And so I looked this word up, and the word, they can tell, is like not an original Hebrew word, but it's one they borrowed from another language. You know how we all do that. And it seems to be Indian in origin. Just think about that for a minute. I think the word is like gauche or something like that. It's the word for apes. But it's not. It doesn't seem like it's originally a Hebrew word, but it was like a word that they borrowed from some other people. Probably the people that had the apes. And so it makes kind of sense that it was of Indian, like from the where we think of the, you know, India. And the word translated apes here says specifically those with a tail is what it probably meant. So probably what we would think of as monkeys as opposed to like gorillas. But he brought monkeys. So around Solomon's, you know, and it's neat, isn't it, that Solomon do all kinds of things about animals and all kinds of things about, but he couldn't just like, it wasn't just that he could sort of tell you about the ones that were common, but he knew about these exotic animals and he had a collection of them. And it would be something, wouldn't it, to be able to visit and see the peacocks and the apes. And in fact, that word peacock that's in there can be translated, they're not sure exactly what it means. The other possibility is a baboon. And so I thought, that's interesting, you know. What if they had baboons and monkeys swinging around when you go to see Solomon's place? Just imagine what it would be like to come visit Solomon to hear his wisdom, and you see these animals you'd never even heard of. I mean, they didn't have Wikipedia, obviously, and they didn't have the Discovery Channel. So if it didn't live in your backyard, you probably never saw it. But you could go to Solomon's palace, and there's some monkeys swinging around. And anyway, that just really caught my attention. I thought, that's so cool that Solomon had monkeys. Now, speaking of people coming to visit and see all his wisdom, back up at verse 1 of chapter 10 is a specific example, a queen. Now, when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to test him with hard questions. I bet she was a school teacher when she was younger, before she became queen. She came to Jerusalem with a very great retinue, with camels bearing spices and very much gold and precious stones. And when she came to Solomon, she told him all that was on her mind, and Solomon answered all her questions. There was nothing hidden from the king that he could not explain to her. When the queen of Sheba had seen all the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he built, the food on his table, the seating of his officials, the attendance of his servants, their clothing, his cupbearers, his burnt offerings that he offered at the house of the Lord, there was no more breath left in her. And she said to the king, "The report was true that I heard in my own land of your words and your wisdom, but I did not believe the reports until I came with my own eyes and seen it. Behold, the half was not told to me. Your wisdom and prosperity surpassed the report that I heard. Happy are your men, happy are your servants who continually stand before you and hear your wisdom. Blessed be the Lord your God who has delighted in you and set you on the throne of Israel." Isn't that awesome? She said, I heard about it and I thought, they can't be telling the truth. That's got to be an exaggeration. So she wrote down some questions. You know, she traveled a long ways. And imagine if you had an opportunity, you were given an audience with the smartest person that ever lived, and you get to ask him whatever you want, and he'll answer. What kind of questions? I bet she kept a little notepad on the ride up there. Oh, that's a good one. I'm going to ask him about that too. And it says she laid it all out. She asked him everything on her mind, and there wasn't anything that she said that he didn't understand and couldn't answer. That's amazing, isn't it? And that was the wisdom that God gave Solomon. So let's pause there for a moment, because we got to figure out a starting and stopping point to these lessons. And let's make some applications of this Solomon's wisdom for us today. Something we can learn from that as we go on about our week this week. First of all, I think it's worth noting that Solomon is to be commended for his desire for wisdom and his humility. He was king, and yet he knew this about himself, that he didn't know everything and he didn't know everything he needed to know. That takes a lot of, that shows a lot of wisdom, in fact, doesn't it? To recognize the limitation of your own knowledge. That shows a lot of smarts. The smartest person understands what he doesn't know. And Solomon was the first to say, I need help, I need instruction, and that's a commendable thing. Turn with me to Proverbs chapter 3. You know, we're told that Solomon spoke 3,000 Proverbs. Not all of our book of Proverbs, not all the Proverbs were written by Solomon, but certainly a lot of them were. In Proverbs chapter 3, a very famous one here. I think I've heard Terry say this is one of his favorites. Trust in the Lord, verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. Here's some wisdom for me and you. Don't be smart in your own eyes. Don't get too puffed up in your own understanding. Because no matter what you know, there's a lot that you don't know. And there's wisdom that we need. And we need guidance. And as soon as somebody thinks they've got it all figured out, you can't help them anymore. And then we're cruising for trouble. We're going to find out the hard way. So it's better to be humble like Solomon and to seek after wisdom. In fact, notice what it says in verse 13 through 18 of the same chapter. Blessed be the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding. The gain from her is better than gain from silver. Her profit better than gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand, in her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness. All her paths are paths of peace. She's like a tree of life to those who lay a hold of her. To those who hold her fast are called blessed. Solomon experienced all these things. Because he sought after wisdom, He got the silver and the gold and the peace and the pleasant days because he made it his goal to know wisdom. God blessed him with those other things. And we're not promised. This isn't some get-rich thing where if you'll seek this, God will make you the richest person in your neighborhood or anything like that. But what it actually says is if you seek after wisdom, you'll get something worth more than that earthly treasure, something more valuable, something that will help you live, have a better life, even more than a raise, more than a big bank account. And Solomon understood that, and that's why he sought for that instead of asking for, give me a bunch of money. And because of that, he was blessed, and he enjoyed pleasant days and good things from God. Now, speaking of the Queen of Sheba, let's go over to Matthew chapter 12. Jesus made a point out of that. You know, the Queen of Sheba that came to hear him with all of her questions and was blown away by his wisdom. Jesus actually brings her up in one of his teachings in Matthew chapter 12, beginning in verse 39. Let's start in verse 38, just to get the whole context. Then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered him, saying, "Teacher, we wish to see a sign from you." But he answered them, "An evil and adulterous generation asks for a sign, but no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For just as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh will rise up at the judgment with this generation and condemn it, for they repented at the preaching of Jonah. And behold, something greater than Jonah is here. The Queen of the South," this is the one that we read about, "will rise up at the judgment with this generation and condemn it. For she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. Behold, something greater than Solomon is here." Think about the point Jesus is making. That he's commending her and he's saying, look what she did. She heard that there was wisdom in Solomon. And she said, I want to go see this for myself. And so she traveled from the ends of the earth. In other words, she made a long journey, put forth a lot of effort to come see this wisdom and experience it herself. And he said, and she's going to sit in judgment of all of you because there's something greater than Solomon here. And what's he implying? They weren't willing to put forth any effort to come get to know him like she put forth effort to come get to know Solomon. And so her example is going to work against you guys, because I'm standing right here, basically, is what he's saying, and you're not coming to listen and recognizing what she recognized about Solomon. So let's make the point for me and you. We understand, if you're a person of faith, that this is God's word, and we have the wisdom of God revealed to us. The creator of the universe has given us a message. Now, the Queen of Sheba traveled from across the world to come hear what Solomon had to say and ask him questions and find out for herself. And we have a message that we believe came from our Creator that's even greater than the wisdom of Solomon. And do we go to any trouble to see what it says? Can we be bothered to even open it up and look at it? To read it? To see what is God saying to me? If she was willing to travel all that way just to go see Solomon, there's something greater than Solomon, and we have access to it. It's sitting right here. It's right in front of us. Do we have the same desire to find out and look into it for ourselves? I think that question is something we can ponder. And then finally, back in 1 Kings, let's go back to chapter 9. God appeared to Solomon two times in his life that I know of. Once in that dream, when he asked him what he wanted. And the other is the occasion of the dedication of the temple. And I would like to use that. There's a prayer there. And so we may look at this again, because the prayer is in chapter 8, and it's really fabulous. It's great. But in chapter 9, God appears to him, and he says something else to Solomon that is very similar to what he said when he told him, I'll give you a long life if you will remember to keep my statutes. So let's look at verses 3 through 7, 1 Kings chapter 9. The Lord said to him, I've heard your prayer and your plea, which you've made before me. I have consecrated this house that you have built by putting my name there forever. My eyes and my heart will be there for all time. And as for you, if you will walk before me as David your father walked, with integrity of heart and uprightness, doing according to all that I have commanded you, keeping my statutes and my rules, then I will establish your throne forever over Israel, as I promised David your father, saying, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. But if you turn aside from following me, you or your children, and do not keep the commandments and statutes I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land I have given them, and the house that I have consecrated for my name I will cast out of my sight, and Israel will become a proverb and a byword among all peoples. And he goes on from there saying the same thing, that if you will keep my word, I will keep blessing you and I will take care of you. But if you turn away from me and if you go after other gods, you or your sons or the people of Israel, then I will cut them off. So we know what happened at the end of Solomon's days, right? And that this tells us something important about wisdom. You could be the smartest person on the planet, and you're still going to be faced with temptation. Your mind could be filled with the knowledge of God and His Word and plants and animals and baboons and all kinds of things, and you're still going to be faced with temptation, and you're still going to have to make choices. And sometimes the wisest person can do the most foolish thing. And we know that's true. And so wisdom does not prevent you from choosing to do the wrong thing. Knowledge doesn't take away temptation. It's good to have knowledge. It's good to have wisdom. God wants us to. It can show you the way toward a better life and blessings and how to know God and how to be pleasing to Him. But even with all of that, you're still going to have choices to make. Satan's still going to tempt you. You're still going to have to choose to obey God, even if you are very, very wise. So, of course, for those of us who are not nearly as wise, we're still going to be faced with temptation too. Temptation is just part of life. So there's wisdom, and then there's using my willpower to choose what I'm going to do. And so we still have to choose to be true to God and to follow Him. Perhaps there's someone here tonight who has something in your life you want to make right. We want to offer you that opportunity. Give me just a second to turn this thing back on. We're going to sing.